Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment, myself and Dave will discuss some of the current business headlines from the local and national papers. In the business of this week, Dave chats with Sharon Farrell of the locally based Family Entertainment Centre. They're called Fun Galaxy.
And David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look at HR issues.
And finally, some really interesting conversations with the founders of three startups that were recorded at the Dublin Tech Summit earlier in the year, with Near FM's Declan Mina asking the questions. Now, if you'd like to get involved in any of the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The text line is open. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch on Twitter anytime. We're at nearby_business, hashtag local biz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So Dave, let's have a look at what's in the newspapers at the moment, and from the front page of today's Irish Times business section.
Yeah, by Joe Brennan of the Irish Times today, a unit of the Rockefeller Group has joined up with Paddy McKillen Jr.'s Press Up Entertainment to buy and redevelop the former Cleary's department store in Dublin in a deal worth $63 million. New York-based real estate firm Rockefeller Group, a majority-owned Europa Capital, is understood to be lead investor in a three-member group that signed contracts this week to acquire the landmark Cleary's building on O'Connell Street from a consortium called Natrium. Now, Natrium bought the department store in for $29 million from US group Gordon Brothers in June 2015 under controversial circumstances that resulted in the loss of 460 jobs. Press Up was previously reported to be in exclusive talks to buy Cleary's. The third member of the group is a family office for private investors called Core Capital. So hope you're keeping in touch with all these names: Natrium, Core Capital, and so on. Rockefeller Group was sold by the eponymous American industrial, political, and banking family to Japan's Mitsubishi estate almost two decades ago. It's expected that Press Up Entertainment, which operates about 30 businesses, including the Dean Hotel in Dublin and the Wellburger franchise, the Stella Theatre in Rathmines, will take on the entertainment and hotel assets in the Cleary's project.
Press Up have done some interesting things. I don't know if you've been in the Stella Cinema in Rathmines, Dave, since it was done up, but it's really, they've brought it back like retro.
We actually supplied some heaters to it, which were painted a particular colour to suit the environment.
Excellent. Press Up, they do a really good job with the business they run. So it's an interesting consortium as well, isn't it? Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. Lots of different names in there. So finally, the old lady of O'Connell Street will be back, considering all the bad stuff that happened in the last few years. It'll be back, and it'll probably be something maybe that we can meet under Cleary's clock again.
It has a lot of memories for some people. I had my first date, the first girl I ever went out with in a kind of serious date. I met her under the clock at Cleary's.
I think there's a film coming out very shortly called Under the Clock, which is all about that subject, and maybe something we could look at on the weekend programmes we do.
Yeah, rather than here. Absolutely. Okay, a skincare company has taken on vegan values.
Yeah, a Waterford company, Human and Kind, is valuing a new deal with the US-owned hotel chain Wyndham Group, close to $3.9 million. The skincare company is in partnership with Hunter Immunities, the Canadian manufacturer of personal care products, to produce a vegan bathroom products for the Wyndham Garden Hotel brand. The vegan range will have a fragrance bath and shower gel, body lotion, shampoo and conditioner in 30 milliliter bottles. Garden Hotels is primarily in the US. The company have developed a range of about 30 skincare products for the face, body, hands and lips, with prices starting at $6.45 for the lip balm. All of the products in the range use natural alternatives to petrochemicals found in mainstream skincare, and they do not contain chemicals, colorants, parabens, perfume or additives, and they are not tested on animals. The company recently closed a major deal to supply Vita, Norway's largest cosmetic retail chain also.
And fair play to them. Now, 50 research and development jobs were announced recently for Dublin as well, Dave.
Yeah, this is in the pharma sector, probably slightly different. This is more serious than the sort of perfume business. An Irish research and development company has completed a 10 million expansion of its global Dublin headquarters. 50 jobs are being created by APC at its Cherrywood operation as a result. This will see its current team of 120 increase by 40% in the next year and a half. CEO Mark Barrett said the new facility with Bavarian Nordic will enforce our stated mission of acceleration and development of quality life-changing medicines to clients. Now, currently APC is working on more than 20 medicines for a variety of cancers, respiratory diseases, Alzheimer's and HIV.
The business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Now, entertaining the kids can be a big challenge, Declan, as you know.
Indeed it can, yeah. You'd need to have all your wits about you.
Yeah, and what to do with the little darlings after school and at the weekend. This week, we take a look at the business of children's play centres. On a wet morning in October, I'm off to Fun Galaxy in Ashbourne. Good morning, Sharon.
Hi, Dave. How are you? Welcome to Fun Galaxy.
Thank you very much. Lovely to see you. Let's
Great
have a look around.
You. Yeah, let's go on inside. So this is Fun Galaxy. As you can see, we've got a huge cafe area. We employ 5 chefs, so we do all our own cooking here, and we specialise in homemade food, and all the kids that go to the preschool and the after school get freshly cooked dinners every day, and then they can play in the mornings before they come in. Before they go into the after school, so 9:30 to 10:00 they play here, and they have the full run of the play centre, so it's great, and it's something that nobody else has. It's quite unique.
Okay, I thought these places were just Saturday afternoon things. Now you have people, I can hear children playing upstairs, so it's preschool, which I've never heard of before because of busy lives, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And we have after school as well, so maybe you could explain that.
Well, we've got party rooms, so because we've got party rooms during the day and we don't have parties in them, we thought, well, what can we do with them? And how can we use them? And with the government giving the ECC money for the preschools, we decided to open a preschool in the party rooms upstairs. So we have 14 kids in one of the rooms, and we've got 12 kids in one of the other rooms in preschool. And they come in at 9:30, they finish about 12:30, and then the girls go on their lunch, and in the afternoon then they go pickups from after schools. So we go to the local schools and we pick up the kids, and we have 100 kids.
Sharon, can you tell us about your branding and advertising?
Yeah, sure. We've actually done no advertising up to about a year ago, and when we decided to, one of our reception girls was studying marketing and graphic design, and we decided to actually take her out of reception and put her into develop a marketing department, put her into the marketing area and do the graphic design. So we're rebranding the whole Fun Galaxy at the moment, the Fun Galaxy brand, and just the tidying up of it and everything else. So instead of calling it Fun Galaxy, a play centre, trampoline park, we're calling it a family entertainment centre now. So it brings everything into the brand, and it, rather than isolate it to people thinking it's just a play centre or it's just a trampoline park, it means that we have absolutely everything. So Aoife is doing all the graphic design, and we're doing our own kind of little alien spaceship kind of good aliens and bad aliens, and so there's kind of a story going to be behind it. And with our website, she's going to update our website as well, and with the website she's going to have a little Fun Galaxy alien hidden somewhere on each page of the website, and we're going to have competitions so the kids can actually go and look for the Fun Galaxy alien, and it'll be different every week, so they'll have to actually look through the website and see where it is and everything else, and then they'll have to follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. So we've set up just recently in the last month to 6 weeks, we've set up a new Facebook page, and we've also set up a Twitter account and an Instagram, and it's going really well. And then we've developed an app as well. So the app is absolutely brilliant because you can get loyalties on the app. We used to do loyalties with a card as you walked in the door, and now we do loyalties with the app. So you get the app, you download the app, you say you're going to come in and play, and we'll give you a loyalty. So if you come in and play, you might play for 10 times, and then you'll get the 11th free, or the jump will be 9 jumps and the 10 10th is free, which we've never given a loyalty on the trampoline park before, but we've decided with the app we'd launch that, and it's working really well. It's great, it's brilliant.
That sounds very good. You seem to be very much on top of one of the questions I was going to ask you was about social media, and of course Instagram stories and all this kind of thing are very, very important nowadays, particularly with even children and like planning their parties, the big day out outside of the childcare issue and all that kind of stuff that you deal with, like people going to work early in the morning and having to work till 6 and getting back to 6:30. How many branches do you have?
We have two branches at the moment, and we're opening a third in Finglas. We're just waiting for our fire cert to come through. We've had a little problem with the fire cert, just with the design of the building and everything else, so we've got to be so careful with child and children and how they exit the building and everything else. So we're at the bottom of that now, so we're hoping to kind of get in to do the building work in the next 4 to 5 weeks, and if we do get in 4 to 5 weeks, we'll be open for the first week in January. So it's really exciting.
So you've lots of spend to go ahead, so obviously there's capital investment going on, and you've got things like insurance, dare I mention.
I'm sure insurance is
without giving us exact figures, I'm sure it's quite heavily insured, and this business has to be.
Has to be, yeah. It absolutely 100% has to be. It's the biggest problem any of the companies that are doing play centres or trampoline parks or any leisure industry, the insurance is an absolute nightmare. It's gone from, say, 10,000 in 2007 to 100,000 in 2016 or 18. It's crazy. It's going to cripple a lot of companies, and we're just fighting it all the time, and we've got to be so careful with our insurance, with our accidents, with our incidents. Every single member of staff has to be first aid trained. Yeah. They have to be trained on how to deal with the parents, they have to be trained on how to deal with the kids, they have to be trained on how to fill out an accident report form, no matter what the accident is. And then we do CCTV, so we try to record absolutely everything. If there is an incident on the premises, we try to record it and keep a note of what happened.
Yeah. Very important, tracking all these things and all in the event. And the litigious nature of the environment in which we live now, people claim very easily, and it's difficult, you know, to deal with those things. Obviously, the safety of children is your most important.
Yeah, it's paramount. Like, every single morning when the girls come in, when they start to work, the first thing they do is safety checks on both the play centre and the trampoline park. Okay. We document absolutely everything, and it's the logistics of it. You have to just document everything, because if you don't, the insurance company will say, well, you didn't say this or you didn't do this. And then if we do, they'll say, oh, you're giving us too much information. So it's the hardest thing.
Do you have a busy time of the year or of the week?
Friday, Saturday and Sundays are our busiest days. Tuesdays are the oddest day in the week, because we can never judge it. I don't know why, but it's any business I've been in, it's the same thing in every single business. We've never been able to judge a Tuesday. It's busy in the afternoons with the after school, because we've got quite a few after schoolers. But then coming in the door with the trampoline park and the play centre, because we have a mix of absolutely everything, we can cater for the kid that's zero to 6 months or 8 months, all the way up to the mums and dads who want to jump with their kids who are teenagers or 12 or 13. So when we put the trampoline park in, what we found was we weren't getting the older kids because they were too cool to go on a play centre. But when we put the trampoline park in, we were getting the younger kids and the older kids, and then the older kids were saying, oh, we'll just go in and look after our brothers or our sisters, and they were actually playing on the play centre as well. Yeah. So it's worked out really well.
So you need a lot of staff. How many people do you employ typically?
We have 110 staff at the moment on our books. Yeah.
So this is not a small business, this is a medium sized business if anything.
Yeah, well, I'd like to think it is. And with Finglas coming on board as well, we're going to employ another 50 staff in Finglas, and all the staff we employ both in Swords and Ashburn are all local people. They're all local kids. A lot of the part-time staff are in college. We try to keep them at the 18 upwards. We can employ them from 16, but it's better to get them at 18, and because they're a little bit more mature, they're going into college and they have a lot more free time during the week as well. Whereas the school kids, which are 16 to 18, we find that they can only really work the weekends, so we concentrate on them at the weekends, and it's crazy busy at the weekends.
Yeah, so you must have a roster system then. So you have supervisors and you have a roster system for people turning up for work, and so you obviously don't deal
with this on your kitchen table on a Friday or a Monday morning.
No, I don't deal with it at all, actually. We've got a HR manager who deals with the staff. So she runs, we have in the two locations, we've got our accounts manager. So she does all the accounts and the bookkeeping and everything else. And I oversee all that with her. And then we've got a HR manager who oversees all the staff. And then she's got four managers under her. And then they've got four supervisors under them. And then under them are all the staff. So what happens at the weekends is the supervisors run the reception, run the kitchen, run the play centre and run the trampoline park between themselves, and then the managers are overseeing everybody, making sure everything's running smoothly. So we have three managers in Ashburn and we've got two managers in Airside.
So you've obviously been in this business for a year or two at this stage. How long has the business been established?
2007 we opened Swords, and 2010 we opened Ashburn.
And you're now opening in Finglas, which looks like a great store. I've passed it by. The location looks like it's going to be like a nice, big, bright, good location on the side of the road. It's got a good frontage and aspect. Are you going to give a food service there as well, the whole package?
Oh, yeah. I've come from a coffee shop background. I had coffee shops years ago, and food is my thing. I absolutely think it's the best, and you have to have the best for the kids and for the adults. And a lot of people come to us because our food is so good. We employ five chefs. We do all our own cooking. We cook all. The only thing we don't cook is our breads. We cook all our own soups. We cook all our own product from fresh. All our sandwiches are made fresh on the premises. So anything you get, you have to wait for, because we don't have defat fryers. We have ovens. We oven roast absolutely everything, even down to your pizzas and your chips and stuff. Everything goes into the oven. So it's healthy, but it's still food that kids want at parties, and that's how it works for us. It's great. I eat the worst that you've seen. We're in the toddler area at the moment, right? And we're after buying a Wipeout, which is an American ninja kind of course thing, and it's a big inflatable, so we haven't got enough space for it in any of the areas. So what we're going to do is we're going to move the toddler area over to the left here, which is the side wall, and then we're going to put the Wipeout over here. We're going to move this football court out of the place, and so the Wipeout's going to kind of take over this whole space. So it's an added on attraction for the kids at the weekends, and it's a really fun thing for the kids to do. Yeah. So they get knocked out of this beam that goes around and circles.
That sounds like great fun. Yeah. The colours are bright here. I see there's soft furnishings, and there's couches for the parents to sit, and tables for, there's a cafe nearby. So it's a really kind of a good place when you've got young children, particularly if they're bouncing around and rolling on the rollers there, and there's a chute.
Yeah, no, they love it. And even the small climbing wall is there because of the smaller kids, because we've got a great big climbing wall, which is 24 foot, but the little kids can't use it. So we wanted to give everything for everybody. We didn't want to isolate any age group of kids. So we wanted them to have the fun of being able to do what the older kids are doing. When they see them on the climbing wall, they want to go on the climbing wall as well themselves.
Just on the climbing wall thing, is that something corporate groups could do? Or do you cater for that sort of business? Something
yeah.
You have an eye on?
Yeah, we do. We do team events and we do corporate functions. So we have a load of corporate functions booked in for Christmas, so we do their Christmas party. So what we do is we book the whole place out. They get it exclusively, so they usually do it on a Thursday or Friday evening from 6 to 8 or 9 p.m. and then we do all their food and everything else. So what we find is last year, because of the trampoline park, the kids were having a great time, and then the parents said, oh my god, can we jump? So we said, yeah, of course you can. And so we ended up getting a lot of business out of that from the companies that the kids, the mums and dads jumped as well. So it was great fun. And they said, one of the companies said they hadn't used something like this before. They'd usually brought in event management company into their own building or whatever, and they decided to have it here for the first time last year. And it was great because they said it was the first time that the parents actually interacted with the kids as much as they did, because they played and they jumped with them. It was brilliant. It really was.
Well, that sounds like something that's going to grow.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, we're advertising it at the moment, so we've got quite a few bookings in for this Christmas, and we've got two bookings in for next Christmas, so hopefully it'll work.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on to the next place.
So this is High Ropes. So what they do, what the kids do, is they go upstairs onto our mezzanine floor, and they get harnessed into a High Ropes course. So it's 6 foot or six foot. Above the play centre. So when the parents are sitting downstairs in the play centre, they can actually see their kids walking around this obstacle course in the air. So it's called a high ropes course, and there's loads of different obstacles. So there's a tightrope that they have to go across, there's a wooden bridge that they have to go across, and they have to be harnessed in. So they're actually swinging from a harness. And it's really scary because
obviously you had to have consultants. You didn't bring this stuff out of your own mind. This is all very technical looking design and so on. Is that this obviously came from originally? You would have had to have consultants.
Yes. What we did was we tendered it out. When we decided we were going to have the premises first, we tendered the play structure out to three different companies, and we said we want something different. We want something that nobody else is going to have, and we want to make it scary and fun for kids. We want to make it that they're afraid to do something and to kind of overcome their fear on what they're doing, whereas a lot of play centres play it very safe and it's very colourful, and it's usually primary colours like your red, your blue, your yellow, your green or whatever. We've actually, because it's a space theme, we've coloured it in purples and greys and blacks. So we've made it a little bit darker than the normal play centres that you'd normally see. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it a bit more interesting for the kids.
So. And it's a little bit quiet here at the moment. I can imagine the decibel level is reasonably high on a Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. But you know what? It's funny because you actually don't hear it when you're working here. And then when you go somewhere outside of the environment and you hear kids screaming, you think, oh my God, what's that kid doing? And when we're here, we don't hear it at all. It's crazy.
You get so. And what's your typical spend per head?
Our typical spend is about €22 per person.
Okay. Yeah. And how long would somebody be here for, generally speaking?
Generally, in the play centre, they're here for 2 hours.
Okay, so it's good value for
them. It is. They come in, it's €8 for them to come in and play for 2 hours, but then the parents in the mornings, they get a tea or a coffee, and then in the afternoons we give the kids a free juice. So they get a cup of juice. It just means that they're hydrated as well, and we're looking after their nutrition and their hydration and everything else. So we're quite conscious of the fact that the kid could be running around for a long period of time without, so we give them a free juice, and it goes a long way. It's a little bit, but it goes an awful long way to the parents.
Sharon Farrell, Fun Galaxy. We wish you every success with your new branch in Finglas.
What a great business, Dave.
Great business. And they're very serious about fun there. As you can see, all the different things they had to talk about. And it's a wonderful place. It's a small entrance in the retail park at the far end of Ashbourne. And when you go in, there's this amazing big place and the trampolines. Everything is very professionally done. And Sharon knows her business there, and well done to her. And the new branch is opening in the old Bargain Town there on the North Road in Finglas. A lot of people will remember it there. It's a couple of garages either side of it. But that'll be opening, as she said, probably in January. So wish her all the best.
Wish her the best of luck to that. And as you said in the piece there, fantastic location. Now, from one exciting business to an egg-citing story.
Who writes this stuff? The Nest Box Egg Company in Monaghan is eyeing expansion in the Middle East, having started selling free-range eggs sourced in Ireland to Dubai 5 years ago. The Castleblaney company sources 26 farmers sources 26 farmers in Ireland, grading and distributing more than 3.5 million eggs each week from the Irish and overseas markets. The Nest Box grades and packs raw shell eggs and processed pasteurised liquid and boiled eggs. The company's golden eggs range includes free-range, organic and corn-fed varieties sold in packs of four or six. The Nest Box began exporting to the Middle East 5 years ago, selling in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates initially. And Director Brian Evers said, we were looking for new export opportunities, and someone mentioned the Middle East. Now, the Middle East is, as you know, quite a sandy
mostly
place.
Mostly desert, yeah. Mostly
the Middle
desert.
East is a desert environment, and free-range and organic hens need grass. So we've got lots of that here, and they can run around free and all that kind of thing. So he said, we have a potential for growth in that area. So they're selling eggs to the Arabs instead of sand.
Brilliant. Excellent. Excellent.
Now, you like a gin and tonic.
I like a G&T, I do. Yes, upon a weekend.
The elderflower.
The elderflower tonic has to be.
All that kind
yes,
of thing.
Absolutely.
No ordinary gin and tonic, man, this. So there's a new Irish gin, a lot of gins on the market these days, which has been launched with more than 50 sockets around the country. It's inspired by an old China trade that delivered silks, spices, tea, porcelain to Europe in the 19th century. Now, the Dublin Whiskey Company co-founder, a lady called Marie Byrne, launched Chinnery Gin. It's a Dublin dry gin made with 10 botanicals. This was the week before last, and she's with co-founder David Haviland. Now, Byrne sold the Dublin Whiskey Company to Quintessential Brands in 2016 and established Chinnery Spirits in Dublin with Haviland. And some other shareholders include Mark Amond, he's not the guy that sings.
Not the singer.
No, he's a former chef at somewhere you off probably frequent, Patrick Gibault, and he's co-founder of La Rosse Foods. You probably know them, I'm sure.
I do,
gin remains the fastest growing spirit category among Irish consumers, and sales were up 47% in 2017, with growth shared between Irish and imported brands. The idea for the Chinnery brand came from Haviland, who he's an engineer and developed an interest in historical China trade while working in Canton. The province in southern China known as Guangdong. Now, my Chinese isn't great, but I think I've pronounced that correctly. The gin is named after George Chinnery, and he was a British portrait artist who began his career in Dublin in the late 18th century before relocating to Canton in 1825. I'm sure that was a long journey in those days.
Indeed, it would have been, yeah.
He wouldn't have needed a gin and tonic after it anyway, I'd say.
It's interesting, the full sort of circle there of the Irish connection as well.
Amazing. And now, just to tell you, it's going to cost you $54.95 for a bottle of this really nice Chinnery gin.
Definitely at the premium end of things, Dave.
Yeah, Chinnery Spirits employs 4 people at the moment. The company will relocate from its current premises in the Institute of Technology in Tala incubation centre to a new 1,350 square feet premises in Ballymount later on this month.
And many those sort of small distilleries and gin companies opening up right around the country and all doing pretty well.
Yeah, there's one of the other ones is Gunpowder. I've seen
Gunpowder from Drumshambo. You've got Dingle Gin as well down there in the Kingdom of Kerry. Yeah. So lots of interesting businesses.
The advantage being that you don't have to wait for gin the way you would whiskey. So
that's
you know the way whiskey has a minimum period of 3 or 4 years before. The gin can be just made
and bottled straight away. Yeah, so it's usually the entrance in for those distilleries, the entrance product.
Yeah, or to keep them going, a few quid on the cash flow before
the whiskey comes along.
You can get, by the way, I was on Lambe Island over the summer, and they have a Lambe whiskey, which is available in off-license around locally. Now, what they do is they buy a concentrate or a kind of a distilled product from a supplier in on the mainland of Ireland.
Right.
And they bring it to the island. They put it into casks from the Jerez region, the Cognac region, who are friends of the family of the Barings out there. And they put it into casks and they bring water from the island, from the actual island itself, which has its own water supply. And they put that with the whiskey. So it's a genuine product that is a Lambay whiskey, and it's available, and I was thinking maybe sometime we'll have a try of it.
Absolutely. You're a font of knowledge when it comes
Thank
to these matters.
Sorry.
Okay, coming up in the second part of the show, very shortly now, I'm going to be talking to David Bell about contracts and all the various different types of contracts, and indeed, is there always a need to have an employee contract as well? And I'm sure David, as usual, will have a very comprehensive answer for us on that. Following up after that, we're going to hear from a trip that Declan Mina of this parish in Near FM. He made a trip to the Dublin Tech Summit earlier in the year, which was on in the Convention Centre for nearby business. And he chatted with the founders of 3 startup businesses, a company called Tract, a company called DesiCrew.com, and another company called Cognition. And they're very interesting but very different companies. So we'll hear all of that after the break. Please stay with us.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
This is Near FM
90.3.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
Now, I'm going to be talking to David Bell in just a moment. You're very welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on air. It's 087 69 44 500. Or you can contact anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz. I'm joined now by David Bell from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues. And this week, David, we're going to look at contracts, perhaps maybe the different types of contracts.
Yes, it's very timely, actually, Declan, because there is new legislation that's currently working its way through the Shannon. It's been passed at Dáil level, but it's going to change certainly some of the aspects of the contract that probably people will be familiar with, both in terms of what the employee has to receive and also in relation to 0 hours. that type of condo, which people are probably familiar with. There's been a lot of coverage in the press about it. Casual contract, 0 hours contract. So it is very timely. So maybe, you know, we can discuss that perhaps as part of the discussion. It is only pending, but it certainly appears that that will be passed before the end of the year. And that will obviously have an impact.
Yeah, you mentioned zero-hour contracts. Maybe we'll start there, or so-called zero-hour contracts. What are they actually? What's the real name of a zero-hour contract?
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, I think there's probably, you know, in practical terms, there's two types, or maybe three, but certainly two. So people might have a casual contract. What we call a casual contract is... The primary difference is under a casual contract, there's no obligation on the employee to some extent to be available for work. So a lot of industries, restaurants and bars would have, you know, rostered hours. They offer someone rostered hours. And if for whatever reason the person isn't able to take them, you could consider that a casual contract. So there's no penalty. Perhaps you mightn't be rostered again. I suppose that's a penalty. But technically speaking, there's no penalty for not making yourself available. And that is usually an hourly rate based on the number of hours that you work.
Okay.
Now, where it has a lot of focus, where the 0 hours contract comes in, is that you have to make yourself available, irrespective of whether there are any hours for you. So in other words, if you had someone on a 0 hour contract and contacted them, they really have to be made, they have to make themselves available. And the problem that has arisen is sort of obvious, is that if there's no work, they don't get paid. If they don't come in, even though they have to make themselves available. Now, under current legislation, there is, slightly technical, there is a capacity to get, you know, up to 25% of your normal working time paid unless you come in for 15 hours. There's a sort of a formula, but by and large, the problem with them is people who are vulnerable, who don't really maybe, you know, can't reject these type of contracts, need the work, but can't really do anything else until such time as they're called into this particular job. And that's the real focus. Now, there is a chance that the whole casual contract regime will be caught up in this, which is something a lot of us are concerned about, because a lot of them are genuinely, you know, part-time work, people just doing a few hours here and there.
Yeah.
And the concern is that they're going to be swamped in or caught up in this whole ban. So fundamentally, the new legislation is going to stop 0 hours contracts, unless they're, you know, in exceptional circumstances. And we're hoping, I suppose, those of us in the arena are hoping that that will include casual contracts, but we're not sure yet, because there is a place for them.
Yeah.
But I, you know, definitely the 0 hours contracts have probably resulted in a lot of misuse and possible abuse of staff for that reason.
And what if the staff or the employee wanted to opt for that type of contract? Do you think that will be allowed in the future?
But to be perfectly honest with you, probably not. Legislation in these areas tend to have a non-sign-off clause, if you know what I mean. They don't allow, like under the transfer of undertakings, if a business is sold or whatever, they don't allow employees to sign out of their contractual rights, purely because historically they were put under pressure to do so.
Okay.
And that was the reality, you know, sign here or else type of thing.
Yeah.
So they make it unlawful, for want of a better expression, to do that. Now, you know, as I said, what they'll probably do is have some allowance for casual work. And hopefully what we're hoping is they put some structure around that. There is another change that's linked to 0 hours, which is called banded contracts, whereby someone is contracted to do, say, 20 hours a week, and in fact is doing 50 hours a week or 40 hours a week.
Okay.
There's an opportunity then for the employee to insist that the contract is changed, to give an average over a certain period of time. That's another, I suppose, big change. And these are all driven by, as with a lot of the legislation in this area, driven by work practices that have occurred and have happened that have, you know, very much gone against the employee in certain circumstances.
I suppose as well, it's in different industries, those different type of contracts suit the employer to a certain extent as well.
Exactly. And you know, in the vast majority of cases, they are in that slightly lower paid arenas, hourly rates, you know, casual contracts, where you've got a significantly large workforce all doing irregular hours, night work, etc. So it's those are the type of industries that you atypically see these type of contracts in.
And in terms of, you know, you mentioned there the two or three different types of contracts. I mean, I'm just one that I would be aware of myself, which is sort of a special purpose contract that I've heard of. Is that a slightly different thing, or where
does
that fit in?
Yeah, that falls into, I suppose, the category of, it's what we call a fixed term contract or a fixed purpose contract. So it is for a set period of time. And there are rules and the specific legislation around that. And then the specific purpose contracts, which again would, you know, be quite used a lot in the IT arena, whereby there might be a project that needs to be, that might take a significant period of time, a year or 18 months, but the individual, the contract is linked to that particular project, because once that project is over, de facto the job is no longer available. So there is the specific purpose, then fixed term, there are rules around that. Again, because of certain practices over the years where people consistently renewed, put people on 12-month contracts, and they expired and they were laid off or let go, and then they were re-employed. So there is legislation that you cannot have an aggregate of more than 4 years unless reasonably justified. And again, you can imagine if someone is on 4 years of a fixed-term contract or four individual fixed-term contracts, it's challenging to find justification to continue with that process if they're doing the same job for 4 years. And that's the idea behind it. Okay. And in fact, if you go over 4 years, the employee is deemed to have what they call a contract of indefinite duration, which is ostensibly a permanent contract. Again, unless the employer can show otherwise. So the first thing is they have to be able to justify any renewals, really, at the end of every contract. Yeah. But if it goes over 4 years, there's an automatic presumption the employee now has a permanent contract, unless the employer can approve otherwise. And that, again, was legislation that was brought in to counter the use or the misuse of these fixed-term contracts.
I suppose two questions, actually. Is there ever a time where an employee shouldn't have a contract, or you, as an employer, you don't require to give them a contract? Is there ever, or does every employee require a contract?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And again, sort of getting into the contract law, so there are two elements to this. One is every employee is entitled to their certain terms and conditions of their employment in writing. So under the Terms of Employment Information Act, they're entitled to get, you know, their job title, their salary, their place of business, etc., etc. What you'd expect to see. That's their entitlement. And currently that's 2 months from the date they start employment. Under this new legislation I mentioned earlier, it's the bill has 5 days, which is a much more onerous obligation on the employer. So that is something in writing which sets out their terms and conditions. Now, what then deems to be a contract depends on what's done with that statement. It's either given to the employee, and therefore the employer has covered themselves. But of course, as a lot of people will do, they'll get the employee to sign it, to accept those terms and conditions, and that, from a legal perspective, is much more likely to be deemed to be a contract. So it moves from an employer's obligation to give the terms and conditions of employment, and it actually turns into a contract. Because in reality, a contract doesn't have to be in writing. As you know, we probably you can have a verbal contract. So I could agree, as a prospective employee, the terms of my contract verbally at a meeting with you. You could promise me the world, and I could shake hands on it. That is a contract.
Yeah.
But you still have an obligation as an employer to give me my written terms of employment.
Okay.
And what sometimes happens is they're different from what was discussed, and that's where the problems
are. That's where they arise. I'm also thinking too, I mean, this is relatively new in terms of business. You know, it's not there for a long time. I'm thinking for people who might be in a job, say, for a long time, and, you know, maybe they started back, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago or whatever, when a lot of this wasn't as required as it is now, but also perhaps people weren't as organised as they are now to do it. Where would somebody like that stand? Supposing they're in a job, maybe have several different roles over the last 20, 25, 30 years, but may actually not have a piece of paper that says, here's your contract of employment.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on the relationship and the circumstances. We would often go into businesses like that where they've got very long-standing employees who would never have got a contract. You know, sometimes they don't like being given a contract. They feel it's sort of, you know, they're maybe old school and feel that, look, you know, we're based on trust here and I don't want to see anything in writing and I don't need a contract. It's very difficult. So without rocking the boat, we say, look, don't get them to sign it. Don't get them to, you know, unless there's something in it that's controversial or they don't agree with, just explain to them, you do have an obligation to give them their written terms of employment. And that's all you're doing. You're not calling it a contract. You're not getting them to sign it. They don't have to necessarily agree to it. As far as you're concerned, you're complying with your obligation. So that's one way around it. Sometimes, to be honest with you, Declan, they just don't bother. If someone's been there in a business 30 or 40 years and have never raised an issue about a contract or getting a contract, without, you know, it's hard to say on each case, but I would be surprised if that person would then take a case against you for not having a contract. I think okay. they would have had to ask for it. So yeah. if you do end up in a discussion and say you're revamping your contracts or you're introducing this first time, I think, first of all, I'd always suggest that they give everyone their written terms of employment. They don't have to call it a contract, particularly those people who are nervous or just feel a contract's not necessary. And if that isn't, you know, available to them and they still don't want to cause any hassle, they just write to the person and say, look, we note that you don't require a contract. Technically, that mightn't get them out if you were inspected or something like that.
Yeah.
But perhaps the inspector might, you know, treat it as it should be and say, look, it's a long standard. There's no,
yeah.
nothing sinister here. They're not, the person is not in any way at a disadvantage for not having a contract. They're paid properly, you know, and all the terms and conditions are being complied with.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, but technically speaking, everyone should have their written terms of conditions. And I said most people call that a contract.
Yeah,
but that's technically what it would be.
Okay, and I suppose, as you say, if you did get an inspection, at least you've shown that you've made some effort to resolve the situation as well.
Yeah, yeah, and if the employee, you know, genuinely feels it's not worth, you know, and there is nothing against something else going on, I think you'd probably just be told issue the terms and conditions as you're obliged to do, and if they don't want to, they want to put them in their drawer. That's your obligation.
Yeah,
is complete. It's complete.
Provided
you can show you've given.
Yeah. No, that's as usual. When is a comprehensive answer to the question? When is that bill expected to pass through the Senate and into law?
Yeah, they're expecting it out before the end of the year. That's what we've been told. I'm actually going on Tuesday to a course on the whole thing, so. If there's anything different, Declan and I, we can maybe touch, we can revisit it in the new year when the actual act is passed, because like a lot of these things, it's all speculation. Everyone has seen the bill, but there's still a lot of discussion as to what may change. And as you know, in the Shannon, things do change. I think the expectation is it's not going to be changed that much.
Yeah.
And it will be, as with a lot of these things, practically what's going to happen when these issues start to be looked at and employers start getting caught by it, because the fines are quite significant. That's another big difference.
Yeah.
So for not giving a terms and conditions of employment, the fines are going to be significant. And as a lot of times now, there's anti-penalisation, which means if the employee does raise the query and raises the question about it, there's very strong anti-penalisation protection in there as well.
Okay, very good. Just before you finish, a completely different topic. I got a text in there from a listener. They're wondering if someone is working part-time, say 2 days per week, do holidays accrue? I think I remember this from our discussion. I think they do in some pro-rata way.
A number of ways, under the Working Time Act, there's three ways that they accrue. The most traditional way that we generally operate is 8% of your working time. So under the legislation, you're entitled to a maximum of 4 working weeks, which could be, if you work 2 days a week, that could be 8 days, obviously. So if you work 1,365 hours per annum, you get your full 4 working weeks. If you use the 8% rule, if you work 20 hours a week, you get 8% of those hours accrued every week that you work 20 hours.
Okay.
And that's the way. So that whatever that results in terms of when you change those 8% of the hours into days or working days,
yeah,
that's what you get. But absolutely, you accrue. All part-time staff have the same entitlements to annual leave as full-time.
Excellent. Thanks a million, David, for that. On the hoof, as usual, a comprehensive answer. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Person.
Take care. Mind yourself. David Bell there from the HR department doing a comprehensive look at that contracts topic. Very interesting, Dave, isn't it? Subject.
Yeah, very interesting actually, and the fact that it's changing, and I think the zero error thing was in the papers quite a bit, and it's important that people know where they stand. How can people be expected to, you know, pay a mortgage or pay rent if they're, you know, they're waiting for the call? to work, and they don't, you know, they're making themselves available. Now, I think probably since that thing was about, those conditions were about, the market has changed, and there, you know, people are you know, the sort of unemployment rate has gone right down, so it's probably difficult for firms to offer unscrupulously offer these sort of 0 hour contracts. You know, so fair is fair. It's a two way street. I've said it before.
That's it. Indeed it is. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with the reports that Declan Mina recorded for us at the Dublin Tech Summit earlier this year.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
Now, I'm really looking forward to hearing these particular three stories. Declan Mina from Near FM, he went along to the Dublin Tech Summit for Nearby Business, and he recorded three very interesting stories. First up is a guy called Russell Sheffield. He's from a company called Tract Music, which is a really interesting startup. Then we have Ashan from Desi Crew. They're all about AI and robotics and all of that sort of stuff. And finally then, the Internet of Things from a company called Cognition. And the founder there is a guy called Thomas McGrath. But here's Tract, first of all.
My name's Russell Sheffield. I'm CEO and T-boy of Tract Music, the world's first 8-track collaboration tool for artists to work together around the world.
And what can artists do with your app?
Very simply, they can connect with each other, they can record very simple recordings using our 8-track facility, where they can swipe in their mates to help them flesh out songs, or just use it solo, and instead of having to worry about firing up a load of wires and cables and mics, you can use the app to produce amazing pieces of work and share those socially, all in a private manner throughout the app.
So how did the idea come about?
Very simply, I had a background in recording. My father used to own a recording studio in London called Trident Studios, and so I grew up in the whole music industry space and playing drums and spending my life with other artists. And what became patently obvious for me a couple of years back was that enough artists didn't have a mechanism that they could share their ideas amongst themselves, and typically an artist knows 3 or 4 other musicians and it becomes quite stale quite quickly. So I wanted to build a platform that enabled people to explore working with other musicians around the world together, but keep it really simple. And 8-track was obviously a homage to Trident Studio, which is the world's first 8-track studio. So we put this tool together and we thought we'd test it for the last 18 months, and we have a fairly substantial user base from China to South America and all over the world now working together.
It's really, you know, there's a lot of changes happening in music, but one of them is the technology has just gone so cheap. Like, I'm recording this on an old phone and it sounds good, and I'm sure like a few days ago or a few years ago maybe you'd need a recording studio, but now with the technology everyone has a recording studio in their pocket. So
absolutely.
What do you think that's going to do to the music industry? What is it doing to the music industry?
I think it's opening it right up. I think it's giving everybody an opportunity to become the next Ed Sheeran. And I think what it does, it breaks down the barriers of cost, and the creativity shines through. And, you know, our strapline is, it's all about the song, it's one song at a time. This is what this enabling people to do. If you've got a great idea, you can have an opportunity to record that and share that and get feedback from your peers or colleagues about whether it's going to work.
And what kind of lessons have you learned? Like, what has come out of it maybe that you weren't expecting, or what have you found from having real users use the app?
I think it's just been a wonderful experience. We've started seeing projects appearing around the world with collaborators that would never have known each other before. We've had testimonials sent to us unsolicited from artists saying, you know, you've helped change my life here. You know, previously in my town, I've only known three or four other musicians. I'm now working with thousands around the world and sharing ideas and getting feedback on my work.
And is there any particular genre that this works for, or does this work for all genres, do you think?
Well, I think it's completely cross-genre, because you can import previous sound bites and previous sample and stuff into tracks as well. So we're getting EDM artists working on it, and then they might bring in a rapper from the States to work with their work, and then you've got classical artists adding strings to people's work and so on. So I think it's crossing all boundaries. We're not focusing on any particular genre. I mean, typically it lends itself more because of the format to singer-songwriters and single artists, but we now have several examples of albums that have appeared straight on iTunes and actually been distributed, that have just been recorded purely just using Tracked.
And what's maybe, is there one that's particularly famous, or are they, is there one that people should look out for?
Well, we've got some amazing stuff going on at the moment. I guess I can share it, but Dave Stewart is one of our investors and a founder of the company. Obviously, he's from the Eurythmics fame, and he's working with a couple of our artists in the app. One lady particularly notable called Iris Gold from Denmark. So Dave is, you know, lounging by the pool in the Bahamas and working with her, and based in Denmark. So there's a great example there.
And if someone's sitting at home with a guitar or with a few songs that they want to sing, what advice would you have for them to maybe advance their music career?
Get involved with us. I mean, we're using Tracked very much as an A&R discovery platform as well. So there's a live feed in the app where people can choose to share their work to their peers, and that stuff automatically bubbles to the top. The best stuff gets voted on, gets listened to, and at that point, that's when we're seeing various other professionals in the industry step in and start to help those artists develop their careers, and obviously that starts with us.
Okay, and it works on iPhone, Android, does it?
It's only iPhone at
the
moment.
Okay, only iPhone, and what's the website, sir?
Tracktomusic.com, that's TRACKDmusic.com.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
My name is Thomas McGrath, and I'm the Chief Executive of Cognition.
And what does Cognition do?
Cognition are an industrial IoT company. We work with manufacturers, predominantly food manufacturers, to help them reduce their operational expenditure.
So that means putting sensors and stuff in factories and then getting the data and figuring out how to cut costs, is it?
Spot on. So we deploy these very small sensors, which we put inside factories. So it could be temperature sensors, it could be humidity sensors, it could be wireless submeters. And we take a lot of data out of the factory, which helps us put together a sort of a jigsaw picture of what's going on inside the operation. We put the data in the cloud, and then we apply our advanced analytics algorithms. Yeah. We're able to identify how the company can optimize how they use their assets, their machines, save money and increase efficiency.
So you're developing the intelligence for the kind of looking at the data. So it's kind of big data, is it, and a lot of data science? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. So our business is operational intelligence. So your average manager inside any sort of production environment is drowning in data at the moment. And really their main concern is, what do I do with this data? So our whole focus on Cognition is to apply a much more directive approach to helping them understand what the data means. It's not about giving them insights, it's about giving them actions that they understand. So it could be something as simple as, you've got an oven here that should be at 220 degrees, it's currently at 115 degrees or 225 degrees, you know, there's a variance, it's fallen out of tolerance, did it come on too late, did it go on too early, what actions need to be taken by the operatives on the ground. Simple things like fridge and freezer doors being left open, right through to when more energy has been consumed on things like heating ventilation equipment. We're able to give real-time intelligence to management, helping them understand when they need to make an intervention inside the operation.
Cool. So if someone wants to find out more about the work that you do, where'd they go?
Yeah, so visit our website, cognition.world, and you can understand what we do.
So that's another one of these fancy new websites. So instead of putting .com, you put .world on it.
Yeah, so it shows our global ambition, but it also shows the applicability of the industrial internet.
Yeah.
We are involved in the Internet of Things space, so everything is within scope and we are not restricted by any geography. Yeah. The other reason is our intelligence platform is called Cognition World.
Okay.
So that is why the web address is such.
There's a lot of talk about the security in Internet of Things. Where do you think that's going to go and what's important to try and keep secure on the Internet of Things?
So from our point of view, we are only taking data feeds of assets. So we are not controlling them. We are not interfering with how they are being run. We provide decision support to managers who then make the necessary interventions. So from our point of view, the only data we're handling is some pretty low value data, how many kilowatts are being consumed or whether an asset is on or off. We don't do and gather any personal data. So from that point of view, you know, we've got less restrictions.
Yeah.
So industrial internet is kind of a more attractive area for a company like us because it is boring data. It's not sensitive data. You know, it's less useful to external parties.
And a big thank you to Declan Mina for recording those for Nearby Business back at the Dublin Tech Summit held here in Dublin earlier in the year. Finally, Dave, the one that got away.
Yeah, the Web Summit, you remember, will remain in Lisbon until at least 2028 under a new $110 million deal agreed between the Irish company that runs the event and the Portuguese government. This follows a tender process involving offers from more than 20 major cities, including Berlin, Paris, London and Madrid. And it was founded in Dublin in 2010, and the summit had grown rapidly and now lays claim to be one of the biggest events of its kind in the world. The new 10-year deal will see the company paid $11 million annually and includes a major expansion of the existing venue to facilitate the conference. Now, as part of the deal, this is the bit that is interesting.
Yep.
The company has agreed a $3 billion buyout clause, which is said reflected the economic impact of the summit in Portugal over the 10-year duration. Last year, the event was attended by 60,000 people. $3 billion if you want to take it to your country.
There you go. The one Paddy, that got away Paddy, from Dublin.
Paddy Cosgrove.
The one that got away from Dublin.
Got away from Dublin.
Yeah,
there you
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll be both back at the same time next week with another Nearby Business. In the meantime, don't forget, if you have a comment on any of the stories featured today or an idea you'd like to discuss with us, get in touch on Twitter at @nearby_business #localbiz. So for me, Declan Ralph,
and me, Dave Daly,
see you soon on the radio. Bye.
Thanks
for that.
Thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
Doyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for North East Dublin. 90.3 Near FM.